At the heart of every legend, there is truth. A few brave souls unite to save their worlds. We can be heroes in our own lives. Every one of us, if we only have the courage to try. Our fates were always intertwined, but now our worlds are joined as one. We need to repair our planets, work together, if we wish to survive. A dangerous secret is buried deep inside the Earth. There is more to this planet than meets the eye. I am Optimus Prime, calling all Autobots. It is time to come home.
Pick a window.
This is the Defenestrate Media Network.
Oh, wow. I don't know about the costume, but that's some set of wheels.
Hi, I'm Marv Wolfman, and you're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
This is the world's greatest comic book podcast, and I'm your host, the radioactive professor of all things comic book, J.C. Carter. Joining me today on the show, my super friend, on the bridge of his own private enterprise, our very own Admiral James Tiberius Batman, Laird Jeff Bell.
Howdy. Good afternoon.
Howdy.
Whatever. Whenever you're listening. Hi.
I noticed we both took some dives into the movies of those who we lost this week. So.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, and I'm unhappy about some of that. So we'll talk about that.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if anybody needs to know this, but I did not remember that The Three Musketeers from 1990 was a Disney show, a Disney movie, and therefore it's on Disney Plus.
Yeah. Yeah. Tim Curry played the Cardinal, right?
Yep. And I fucking love that movie. Even though it's the most Hollywood of the movies that you could ever make, I just fucking love it. And I think it's because of Oliver Platt.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That's what I was thinking. He makes that movie.
Mm-hmm. If it wasn't for him, I don't think any of us would have enjoyed it as much. So, back then.
Yeah.
I guess there isn't much more to talk about. We might as well dive into some comic book news.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice,
KPEX, showcasing Korean content, is coming to New York City Comic Con in 2027. 3-day event will be held Memorial Day weekend. The Javits Center. It's going to have K-pop, K-dramas, K-comics, K-games, K-food, K-beauty, or as it's being called, a revolutionary Comic-Con for the Hallyu generation. Hallyu? Hallyu.
Hallyu.
Why not?
Something. Yeah, no, I don't know. I'm behind the times on the Korean love fest that people have right now.
My sister, who is 4 years older than I am, loves K-pop Demon Hunters.
Oh.
Can't get enough of it. She just loves it.
Yeah.
Says she watches it all the time. So
I'm aware of it. I've never watched it, but I'm aware of what it is and that people fucking love it. So I'm not going to yuck anybody's yum. I think this is great. You've got this and have some fun, you know?
You know what? International multiculturalism is always good for the brain.
That's right.
Yep.
It is.
It's like travel for those of us that are too poor to travel.
Homebound? Yeah. That tend to staycate. Yep.
Yep. Yep. So that's going to be good. But Yeah. Very exciting.
Yeah.
Very
that's
exciting.
That's really cool. The fact that we're getting one in the United States is a big deal.
Yes. Buffy, Angel, and Firefly relaunches have all been delayed. Dynamite's new Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Angel comics, both written by Kelly Thompson, were respectively set to launch in July and August. But neither title has hit the shelves. In a statement, Dynamite CEO and publisher Nick Barucci has now provided an explanation, saying Thompson's story for Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Angel evolved and became more ambitious. I love that about her. So yes. We felt we needed to take a step back and up the page count to meet the story and deliver the best possible product for fans. But yeah, Dynamite also shared an update on two more relaunches, Firefly and the X-Files. They'll be coming out now in December.
Yeah, everything's getting pushed. Angel was supposed to be out this week. Buffy was supposed to be out 2 weeks ago.
Yep.
And we noticed. And finally, Dynamite's like, oh, I guess we better tell them.
Yep.
But I guess we better say something. Kelly Thompson was interesting. She finally broke the silence. You know, she's like, I can finally break the silence on this, on her newsletter. And she said, well, there's things that happen behind the scenes I can't talk about, but, you know, where I'm glad it's finally going to come out.
Good for her.
Damn. I'm like, what happened that pushed all this aside? Was Whedon getting in going, hey, I want my beak wet. I want to be involved in all of this. Was it something that, you know, Thompson's ambition, as they talk about, was that too much for Dynamite to deal with? I don't know. They do some pretty ambitious books, in my opinion.
Sure, but it was the upping the page count, since most mm-hmm. comics are all the same amount of pages.
Yeah, 22.
Yeah, so what does that mean? Less ads?
Less ads. Yeah, that's really it. Less ads for other Dynamite books, which can piss them off. Because, I mean, it's like back in the newsstand days, you had to have advertising because that's what funded the book. And kept it at like 10 cents or 25 cents, and it just kept going up after that. But that's what funded the book, just like newspapers rely on, you know, getting advertising, local advertising. But nowadays, they don't even bother with that. They just, you know, bilk you for $4.99 and then give maybe a penny of that to the creators, and meanwhile, they take the rest. But they also advertise all of their books exclusively in their own books. So, yep.
Yep. Boom Studios has launched Boom Reads With You, a series of reading challenges. The first challenge is to reread the entirety of James Tynion IV's Something Is Killing the Children in the run-up to issue 50's release on October 7th. The first five issues in particular this week, the official page reads, catch up, read for the first time, or lurk to your heart's content as we provide guided milestones to keep you on pace week to week, recaps, and much more.
When I first read the headline, I was like, hey, Boom's doing a literacy thing, a literacy outreach. No, it's just, we need you to read our books. Yeah.
Yep. Basically, it's encouraging readers to pick up single issues at their local comic book shops, volume one of the trades from a bookstore, comic shop or library, episodes 1 through 13th on Webtoon or Comicsology. It concludes telling readers to then join us for discussions, hot takes, and monstrous surprises.
Ooh.
Dun, dun, dun. You know what? Rereads are great. I'm currently in a position of rereading most everything I own at the moment. So, IDW released a clever little Facebook post saying that a truck carrying several, and by several, it is a fuck ton of their comics, was involved in an accident.
Yeah.
And so they got a picture of the truck off in the woods. That's an accident right there, and all of its insides have spilled out onto the forest floor.
Yep.
So the cats from Feral will have something to read while they're being chased by zombies.
There were so many readers who were like, where's this forest? Asking for a friend.
Yeah, I mean, when we were young, we used to get pornography in the forest. Now it's apparently... Yeah.
Now, apparently, it's the Star Trek 60th anniversary issue, because that's going to get delayed a week.
Yep. So
it's supposed to come out this week, and nope, not so much.
The following titles are going to be effective. Event Horizon Inferno 5, Sonic and Godzilla number 2, Star Trek the 60th Anniversary issue, and TMNT Journeys number 13. So replacements are already being printed.
Yep, the Star Trek one is the one that hurts. Just don't slide off the road this time, buddy.
Yep. Wakey,
maybe
wakey.
Maybe take a different route through the mountains if you can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that is it for the comic book news.
All right. Well, we're going to take a little break. And when we come back... Oh, wait. No, before we do that, let's talk about what we've been reading this week.
All right.
Mr. Bell?
Well, a lot of math. But this week we were doing statistics. And statistics, when you break it down into let me teach you math form, hurts my head.
Yeah.
But when I can take a step back and view statistics and like rewrite the story problems in my head and put a political spin on it for the days of my political operative, you know, maths, suddenly
the numbers argue math with candidates. Yeah.
Yeah. Suddenly the numbers come alive and make more sense. And I'm doing much better in week four than I was in weeks 1, 2, and 3. Not much better, but better.
It's got to be better. It's got to be better.
It's the show your work, and my work does not look like their work.
No.
You know, but we still come up with the same answers, which I've always thought was fair, but I've noticed that math teachers throughout history really want you to do it their bullshit way as opposed to a way that makes sense.
Yep.
Yeah. So other than that, in my spare times, you know, which I've had very little, but some... Small Favor, Dresden number 10.
Ooh.
From Jim Butcher.
That's one of my favorites.
Is it good so far?
Yeah, that is one of my favorites. He was finally done with the whole Fallen Angel curse, you know, and just all the stuff going on with Michael and everything. By the end, I remember being in tears at the end because of the whole thing with Michael and stuff and just what Michael's wife says to Harry. And I fucking love the book. So yeah, it was the one where I'm like, okay, never mind. You've had me this for 9 books. This one, I'm now all in. It's a cult. I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm hooked now, period. Yeah.
Yeah. What about you?
Let's see. So this got dropped in my hold, but I was like, well, I get Batman, so I might as well. Batman, Bad Seeds, Sunset. So Poison Ivy, I guess in her series, got made the mayor of Gotham. And she was trying to fix things in Gotham. Of course, she can't. Meanwhile, at some point, we had Vandal Savage become the... Actually, it was in the pages of Batman. Vandal Savage became the commissioner of police. And so the two have been at loggerheads. And I guess in the most recent issue of Poison Ivy, she's decided she's done. She's just going to wipe out Gotham. And meanwhile, you've got Vandal Savage just single-mindedly leading an army of his shock troops at her. And she goes to the Parliament of the Trees and says, "You can have Gotham." And they give her all these prehistoric plants. And I guess at one point, when the plant life first appeared, it was, you know, the whole planet was covered in carbon dioxide and it was releasing all kinds of things so it could grow quickly. And a lot of those spores were deadly to animal life. It just started growing and growing, you know, it just took off. And so she's just doing the same thing to Gotham that prehistoric plants did to make the earth. But of course that's going to kill everybody in Gotham, so we can't let that happen. I'm like, well, if you fix the fucking atmosphere, I'd fucking love that, but you know. maybe go do that in an open area like the Mojave or something, like, you know, Poison Ivy. I you know, doing it in Gotham kind of is going to kill people.
Yeah, it's not that she's got, you know, that anybody's necessarily against her making more trees and plants and all that. It's that when she does it, people die. That's the only reason Batman's got a bent with her.
Yeah, it's the only problem.
Yep.
And I'm like, lady, maybe you just need to get some money and get out of Gotham and go somewhere where you can just, you know, grow a forest.
The Everglades could use some help.
Yep, Everglades, the Brazilian rainforest. I mean, yeah, good part of the planet could use it. Let's see, we have Black Tower, the Raven Conspiracy from Vertigo. Ram V is producing an interesting story so far. You have a Native American or partially Native American agent who, it turns out, is, as they keep calling him, an Esper. And he's very psychic, and he's been sent to London to join the Black Tower and be an agent for magic and everything. Meanwhile, there's this whole weird group of people. One's a werewolf. I know that. And they are all part of this group. Hopefully we'll get to know them a little better as the books go on. This kind of has to open on action, and so you don't get to know everybody right away.
Sure.
I'm like, you know, there are ways to write that. Because I did, but, you know, you don't have to. I guess you can write it the way you want to. And then I talked about this last week. Wolverine number 25. Wolverine joining up with the three aspects of himself from different dimensions and dealing with more adamantine. It's like, okay, Solid and Ahmed, enough with the adamantine. Let's have it gone for a while. You don't need to bring it back every five issues. It's kind of getting old. So, same problem we had with, Miles Morales. It's like, stop bringing it back. Just let it die and move on to a new story. If you've only got one story for Wolverine, quit milking it. Hand off to another writer, move on to another book.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Otherwise, I mean, he's got to get his adamantium claws back, or he's got to figure out to lead with his left instead of his right because he keeps breaking his claws off. And he's got his healing factor back, though, so that helps. But yeah, it is what it is. I'll keep reading it because at least he's not afraid to shave. So that is what I have read. Now we'll take a little break, and when we come back, we're going to give our picks of the week and pick of the future.
Let's take a moment to breathe. Deep inhale. Extend your spine. Remain focused on what you're doing. If safe to do so, exhale slowly, leaning to one side. Inhale back to center. If safe to do so, exhale slowly to the opposite side. Find mental health resources at loveyourmindtoday.org. This message is brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ed Council.
In a world where MAGA is banning and burning books, it is a revolutionary act to read. It's Monday in America is a bold collection from the left show's J.M. Bell about politics, family, aging, and the uncomfortable truths we keep avoiding. No talking points, just real life in a divided country. Order your copy of It's Monday in America today for just $14.99 at mondayinamerica.com. If you're looking to feel hopeful or inspired, or if you're just frustrated and unsure about where we're headed, this book provides a unique look at the life of a Gen X liberal, the challenges and victories, and the question, what kind of world have we built for our children? It's Monday in America. $14.99 at mondayinamerica.com. It's Monday in America. Better to die on your feet than live on your knees.
Hey, this is Elena Huffman, Abaddon on Supernatural, and you are listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
You pick out the hearts that break to make your ego high, and I was just your pick of the week.
So I forgot I was going to lead with this, and then I thought, well, I'll just throw it in here because this is kind of a spot where I can talk about stuff. I have some panels at FanX this year in Salt Lake City. So if you're coming to FanX, maybe check out my panels on Friday at 6 o'clock. It's 1986. It's 2026. 40 years of Watchmen. So that'll be fun.
Yeah.
Because I can talk about the books more than anything. On Saturday at 3 o'clock, I've got 40 years of The Dark Knight Returns. So I managed to get on a panel of for each of the ones that basically revolutionized comics in the 80s. So that's really cool. And then at 4 o'clock, right after, I got to run to... I basically stay in the same room, looks like. And it's Starfleet Academy, the best new Trek show. And I'm in that with Adeline Tolman. And a couple of guys, you know, we kind of know, Rebecca Frost and Brandon Ushio.
Oh, fun. That's a great group.
So this should be a fun little group talking about one of my favorite shows and sadly canceled well before its time, Starfleet Academy. So there you go. In the meantime, what are you looking forward to this week, Jeff?
DC Comics has put together a collection of Batman City of Madness. That was, I remember when that one came out. And it was a black label.
Mm-hmm.
So we ended up waiting on, I think, the second one for an awful long time. And I just never came back to it. But, you know, it's Christian Ward and I like Christian Ward.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got the fucking the Court of Owls in it, and I like the Court of Owls, you know. So this one looks good for me. That's coming out from DC. Mm-hmm. What else do we got? Oh, from Marvel, Star Wars Rogue One, Darth Vader number one.
There you go.
When negotiations fail, the Empire sends in its attack dog, Darth Vader. Rawr, rawr, rawr. So this is Christopher Condon, Luke Ross, David Marquez, but yeah, I like these weird little, you know, one-off comics,
mm-hmm.
that they do, especially for some reason. I have yet to read one of the Vader ones I didn't like, you know.
Yeah.
They're really well, and it's I think it's fun to get in there and get juiced up by the bad guy, and it makes for some really creative writing. And he just gets more and more badass the more and more he's in comics. So I'm really actually looking forward to this one. What do you got for mainstream?
For Marvel Comics, we have the Spider-Woman 50th Anniversary Special. Can't believe it's been 50 years. To know her is to cheer her. Celebrating 50 years of Marvel's Dark Angel and Nocenti. Returns Spider-Woman to Los Angeles for a detective story of the ages. And Dan Waters gives us a spine-tingling look into Jessica Drew's future. Day one and day one are 18,262. Spider-Woman fans alike won't want to miss this jam-packed issue. So a little bit of an anniversary. I love these anniversary specials just because I've been around that long reading these things. And it's like, oh, yeah, this is fun. I can't wait to check out what they're talking about with Spider-Woman.
Yeah.
And then from DC Comics, I love this. I love it. It's Doom Patrol number one, coming from the Next Level imprint that they're doing. We've got Darcy Van Poelgeest writing it and Nico Henricon doing the art. It looks like it's the classic team of Robot Man, Negative Man, and what do they call her? Stretchy Woman or something like that. But
oh,
yeah, Elastigirl, that's it. Elastigirl.
Oh, okay.
And the Chief. So it looks like it's the classic group. Hopefully we'll get Crazy Jane and some of these others from the additional series as the series goes on. Looks like a lot of fun. Love Doom Patrol, so looking forward to Doom Patrol. Then from Image Comics, we've got a new series premiering called Crowdbound by Jeff Lemire and Dustin Nguyen. All is dark, but all is not lost. Rose isn't special. She works in the factory just like everyone else, a dark, sprawling, monolithic structure that runs along the coast and cuts the world in two. All that's left now are desolate settlements that exist in its shadow, made up of submerged villages, derelict woods, and deadly swamps. No one knows what's left of the world on the other side. But when Rose's young daughter, Ava, is violently taken from their shanty town home a year before she is meant to join the workforce, Rose will come face to face with surreal, harrowing forces outside the factory walls, including a terrifying figure called the Scarecrow Queen, who has an offer, one last chance to save her daughter in exchange for her soul. Part post-apocalyptic neo-western, part southern gothic, part dark fantasy crowdbound, spins a heart-wrenching and violent story about mortality, holding on to the hope of darkness, the darkest worlds, and the bonds that make us human. It's Margaret Atwood's The Handmaid's Tale meets Cormac McCarthy's The Road.
Oh.
With echoes of Kill Bill and Pan's Labyrinth. And I'm like, but she meets a scarecrow in the very first issue. It's also The Wizard of Oz. You need to get that in there as well, because it sounds like The Wizard of Oz meets Cormac McCarthy's The Road. It looks like fun. Looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. Speaking of a lot of fun, from Bad Idea, we have Warbird number one finally coming out. This is Derek Kolstad and Robert Venditti with Alex Maleev doing the artwork. Kolstad was creator and writer of John Wick, as you know, and Robert Venditti did Superman 78, and of course Alex Maleev needs no introduction. He's a fucking amazing illustrator.
Nice.
And this is basically a spy story. You've got a guy who, Cole is this guy who can basically, he's a repo man. He can repossess heavily guarded mega yachts from billionaires, private planes from captains in industry, and everything in between. If it's got an engine, he can drive it, ride it, or fly it straight out from under the nose of an army of guards. Now he's got the job of a lifetime. He's got the Russians have stolen aeronautical military secrets from China, France, Germany, the UK, and the US to Frankenstein together the ultimate bleeding edge next gen fighter jet, the Warbird. There are only three of them in existence. They're a force of absolute nature, $1.4 billion a piece. Sounds like Trump's plane. Dominating every global hotspot from Syria to Ukraine. And Cole's been hired to steal one and destroy the other two. His fee? 10%. I just love that, you know. Okay, 10%. And failure doesn't mean jail time and fines. It means a bullet to the back of the head if he fails. So they put out a little thing around Free Comic Book Day, but you know, it's Bad Idea, so they didn't do it the way everybody else does. But Charles definitely put it on the table for Free Comic Book Day. I picked it up, read it, thought, this looks like a lot of fun. I can't wait for this book to come out, and it's finally coming out. But you, sir, what are your indies?
Come on, Chrome, don't let me down now. Coming out from Titan Comics, Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home. The making of the classic film. It's a coffee table book.
Yep.
I like coffee table books. I'm old now.
It's The Voyage Home. It's one of my favorites.
I like having them out on the table for nobody to look at. I do have the one, the Obama one that his photographer put together.
Mm-hmm.
And that one gets a lot of people flipping through it. But otherwise, my other big books just get ignored. And that's fine. I'd rather you didn't touch my shit anyway. So, yeah, that's this fair. is... Exclusive interviews, photographs, untold stories from cast and crew. The book reveals how director Leonard Nimoy, sounds familiar, and the creative team drafted a legendary time travel adventure.
Mm-hmm.
So that one looks like fun. And then coming out from... Nope, that's not it. That's not it either.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. IDW, for some reason, had the 60th anniversary special.
Well, they didn't know the truck was going to go off the road before they released the solicitation, did they?
Yeah. So I was looking forward to that. I guess I will look further forward to that.
One more week. One more week, they say. So, yeah. It's like, damn. That was the one I was really wanting to get this week, too.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
But that's what I got for indies.
All right, let's hop in the TARDIS, and we'll head into that little nebulous zone between between October and November, and give our picks of the future. Since this is the last week of August, as of day of recording, it's the 30th of August. Tomorrow is the 31st. You still have time to go in this week and order anything that was going to come out in October. And I encourage you to do that, because if you want these books to come out and be there for you when you want to read them, you got to pre-order. So one last pre-order. We talked about this a few weeks ago, but Universal Monsters, The Bride of Frankenstein Lives, number one, from Kelly Thompson and Mattia De Yilis, is coming out. In-store date is October 28th. But don't wait for it to show up in store. You won't get it. It will be gone. You need to pre-order it. So this is Bride of Frankenstein. I got to tell you, this book is as gorgeous as any of the other ones, as almost all the other ones they've done. You know, I mean, art is subjective, so I don't want to rip diss on anybody's art like some readers have with a couple of the books. But this one, I'm like, damn, I can't wait to read this book.
Nice.
I love Kelly Thompson, and when she's working with Mattia, it is just one of my favorites. So that is my pick of the future. How about you, sir?
Distillery, The City Beneath Her Feet, coming out in both trade paperback and hardcover.
Mm.
A bloody love letter to New York. The City Beneath Her Feet is an action thriller love story for a new generation. This one's coming out from James Tynion IV. Mm. Mm. And Elsa Chartier. So, look, like I said, I have yet to read anything from Distillery that I don't like. Most of it I love. Some of it I like, but most of it I love. And James Tynion IV is talent on feet. So, you know, I've got no idea on this one. It just looks interesting. It sounds interesting. And it's from an author that, you know, I really have clicked with in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What do you got?
Well, that was it.
Oh, we're done.
I already gave mine. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So we're going to take another break. And when we come back, we've got sad news out of Tinseltown.
So, come up to the lab and see what's on the slab. I see you shiver with anticipation.
My name is Peter Davison. I played the Fifth Doctor, and you're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
Hey, folks, Jeff here. So, you want to start a podcast? Maybe you already did, and it's just not going the way you thought it would. Well, here's the truth. It's not about the mic, it's not about the software, and it's definitely not just about posting episodes. It's about building a show that people care about. That's why I created the Defenestrate Media Podcast Academy. It isn't theory and it isn't fluff. It's a step-by-step breakdown of what actually works. Choosing a name, choosing a topic, building your structure, growing an audience, trying to turn your podcast into a brand, and maybe even a business. If you're serious about podcasting, this is a good place to start. And if you're just tired of guessing, this is how you stop. Check out the Defenestrate Media Podcast Academy and build something worth listening to. You can find more information at thecomicbookpodcast.com.
Hi, this is Kevin Eastman, co-creator of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and you're listening to me on the world's greatest comic book podcast.
Wah, wah, wah!
Patient. But maybe the rain is really to blame. So I'll remove the cause. But not the symptom.
Well, the Grim Reaper took his shot at 80-year-olds this week and missed the one we all want him to take.
Yeah, I think the Grim Reaper's been drinking.
Yep, I think so.
Yeah,
I think he confused a name and then he went after the wrong star from the wrong co-star from Home Alone 2. And then went after the wrong leader of, you know, weird things. So let's find out about that as we dive into some Tinseltown news.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
Well, if you didn't know this by now, I'd like your quiet, idyllic lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
But Dolly Parton, queen of country music, dead at 80, after a short run with some kind of cancer.
Yeah, yeah.
A brief battle with cancer.
It came up on her pretty quickly. She was starting a residency in Vegas and had to cancel it.
Yeah.
Because of this. And it was almost pancreatic cancer quick. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Whatever it was apparently very fast. And that sucks. It's, you know, look, we all know 9 to 5.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's other songs of hers, including she did a stint with The Muppet Show.
Yep.
You know, she has crossed out of her area into mine several times, you know, throughout my life with a positive touch. Unlike, you know, a lot of country stars, especially the new ones.
Mm-hmm.
But no, her support of the LGBTQIA plus folks. There's a story going around online about her driver, who was a trans man, and she had him for 30 years.
Yeah,
that sounds pretty close to allyship to me.
Her hairdresser took her to a drag show in Hollywood, where they were like, "All we got to do is walk across the stage and drag, and they'll give us a free drink." if you get applause. And it was all these men, you know, these drag performers dressed as Dolly. And so she got in line with the dollies. She was the last one, didn't get a single bit of applause. So she loves to tell the story about how she lost the Dolly lookalike contest to drag queens.
That's fair. I think it was because I wasn't competing. I could have lost that better than her.
Yep.
I could have.
No, everything about her, she was right up there with Fred Rogers and that, you know, although Jimmy Carter, she was just a fine human being. One of the greatest. If you want to say this is what a Christian should be and we wish they were, you point to people like Dolly Parton, Fred Rogers and Jimmy Carter.
Yep.
Because they actually were out doing the work that and they were always like, you know, she was like, Why would I, you know, God told us don't judge. That's his job. We're supposed to love one another. So I'm not going to judge these people. That's God's job. I don't have time for that. She's like, I'm going to love them. And she loved everyone and took care of everyone. Her literacy campaigns were fantastic. If you signed up for her literacy campaign from almost birth till you started kindergarten, till they started kindergarten, your kid would get sent books every month.
Yeah.
That you could read, that they you could read to them.
That's just barely rolling out in Utah this year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And these books, I mean, they put out whatever she's like, no, put it out. That's a good book. You know, she didn't discriminate. She didn't burn the books. She wanted the kids to read, you know, in a world where they want to burn books and ban books. She wanted kids reading because she knew that's important.
Legendary film and TV actor, best known for playing Dr. Frank N. Furter in the cult classic The Rocky Horror Picture Show, has passed away. Tim Curry, dead at 80. So, he's been having, I mean, issues obviously medically since his stroke.
Yeah.
A few years back.
He had a debilitating stroke like my father did. It didn't zap his ability to speak like my father's did, which was horrible for my dad because he loved to talk. But this it was like it just left him, you know, wheelchair bound and struggling for a long time. But he still did everything he could, you know, to be out there to give fan service and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was trying.
It's when you decide you're gonna watch a Tim Curry movie, you know, to celebrate his life, which we will talk about in a minute. There is plenty to fucking choose from.
Oh, yeah.
And
so many movies.
I regret my choice, which is fine. Which is fine. We'll get into it. But
it's only because Rocky Horror isn't streaming anywhere. That's all.
Oh, no, it is.
Oh?
It is. But when Tiffany watches that for the first time, I want it to be with a live audience in a theater. So
I chose not
to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's my favorite of his movies. So, Tim Curry, gone too soon. Wonderful human being.
You know that I mean, this is a thing important to me because I directed the play, but when they brought Amadeus to Broadway for the first time from London, it was, Gandalf.
Ian McKellen.
Ian McKellen playing the role of Salieri and Tim Curry playing the role of Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart.
That would have been brilliant.
I'm like, I want to see the video footage of that. That looks so fun. I've seen photos and I'm like, that looks like so much fun. And I want to see the video footage of it as well, because it would be so good. Oh my God. What a performance that would have been. So yeah.
Yep.
Gone too soon.
Transformers, Peter Cullen, voice of Optimus Prime, dead at 85. I don't know what to say about this dude. He was in every fucking cartoon you've ever seen for 30 years. You know? He's beautiful, deep, melodic voice. Really good at character work. And you do. We know him as most of the voices of Optimus Prime from the 80s until now.
I mean, how happy were we when we go see Transformers 1 and Optimus Prime speaks for the first time and it's Peter Cullen's voice?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not some big named star. It's not, you know, somebody else with a deep voice. It's, you know, that's the voice. That will always be the voice of Optimus Prime, was Peter Cullen. He hasn't done it for a couple of movies, I think, but man, that was the one, man. I loved hearing Peter Cullen playing Optimus Prime.
He was also Eeyore in Winnie the Pooh, Monterey Jack in Chippendale's Rescue Rangers, and was Carr in Knight Rider.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. That, I can hear that now, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
He was also the voice of Mario in the original Donkey Kong animated series back in the 80s. He was 85 years old and gone too soon.
Too soon.
We got some time. You want to do the rest of the news?
Yeah, let's hit these pretty quick before we get into TV.
Spider-Man made the internet top 10 this week in Minneapolis, where apparently he was on vacation. I wonder what MJ was up to.
Yep.
When he just leapt over a crowd of racists to punch the head racist right in the face.
Nice.
Yep. This ass clown named Jake Lang, garbage human being. But yeah, a protester dressed as Spider-Man went viral after clashing with far-right demonstrators at Minneapolis City Hall Saturday, August 22nd. I love it. I love it. And not only that, we're getting this from The Beat, the comicsbeat.com, and they're not putting out the name of the guy who was dressed as Spider-Man.
You don't give away the secret identity of Spider-Man.
No, you do not. Not if your name's Comics. I mean,
we had all those movies where Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man would get his mask removed, and everybody's like, "We didn't see him. We don't know who he was."
Yep.
All the New Yorkers, because they're like, "No, he's too important. We don't want him to be bothered when he's not being Spider-Man." You know.
Yep. Somebody fronted his bail, and two separate GoFundMes were put together that have raised a combined $110,000+ to support Spider-Man.
Support his legal defense.
Yep.
I love it.
Yep. I love it. This is, and it's just a wonderful fucking optic. I mean, it really is.
So cool.
Thank God it wasn't a guy shaped like me. Doing it, because then all of the headlines would be fat Spider-Man. But this is it. This is how you're supposed to protest. I love it.
A guy dressed like Tom Goodman from The Big Lebowski in a Spider-Man mask punched out a racist today.
Sam Register is leaving as head of Warner Brothers Animation, Cartoon Network Studios, and Hanna-Barbera's Studios Europe. It sounds like he was overworked. But longtime Warner Brothers Animation boss Sam Register is departing the company next week as his contract expires. Okie dokie.
It also sounds like Warner Brothers didn't fight to try to renew it and keep him on.
No, I've got a very good friend in animation right now, and the animation departments are really, really pushing that to move to AI for a lot of this stuff. So you've got all of these animators that are going to be out of work soon because the studios are greedy sons of bitches who don't give a fuck about art.
Yep. They don't care. They're like, and it's one of those where it's almost fair in a way. I mean, yeah, animators are losing their job, but you're like, well, the art is original at least instead of AI doing some slop. But still, AI animation is not going to be as good as hand animation. I'm sorry. It's just not.
Nope. Lacks nuance and depth.
Exactly.
But Register ran Warner Brothers Animation for 18 years.
Yeah.
That was a long-ass time.
All of the good, you know, the recent great animation that's come out of Warner Brothers that we've enjoyed, Sam Register's responsible for it.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. And then finally, the cute little story. Remember Christopher Nolan's Batman Begins had the Wayne Manor?
Yes, Wayne Manor.
Stately Wayne Manor, beautiful building, all of that. The estate used for that location may be taken from its owners if repair work, including bat surveys, do not commence, according to local council notices. The stately home was built between 1852 and 1854 in Buckinghamshire, a region in southeast England. So apparently it needs work, including counting the bats. How many bats you got? I would hope more than a few.
They released a lot there on the Batman set, so who knows how many got left behind.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, that's it for the news.
All right. Well, let's talk about what we've watched this week, Mr. Jeff.
Which one do you want to say for last?
That isn't Lanterns, I guess. We'll focus on Lanterns this week. So that isn't Lanterns or Star Trek.
Okay. Yeah. I watched a Jason Statham movie called Shelter.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody had a British accent, which was delightful.
Oh, good.
And basically, he's a special ops mover and shaker who refuses an order to kill somebody that doesn't need killing, goes into hiding on a lighthouse where there's no surveillance, and then there's a huge surveillance state, which, I mean, is right up England's alley, let's be honest.
Right.
And he accidentally, part of his face gets seen, blah, blah, blah. He gets mistaken for a terrorist because somebody fucked with his file, yada, yada. There's a little girl involved who wasn't annoying the entire movie, which was great. And, I mean, it's pretty standard Jason Statham fare, Shelter. Mm-hmm. It was just one of the better ones. You know, I liked it. It had a good feel, a good edge, kept me on my seat. We had an option last night. The missus and I.
Yeah.
I wanted to watch a Tim Curry movie. She wanted to watch a Dolly Parton movie. And okay. I said, how about 9 to 5?
Oh, yeah.
And she said, how about Straight Talk?
Oh.
Which I had not seen before.
Yeah, I've not seen that one, but I've heard.
Oh, it's not great. It's not great. It treats radio like a serious media, terrestrial radio like a serious media. Like with limos and important things and production teams and all of that. And having been in radio, it's utter bullshit. It's just all bullshit.
Yeah.
Nobody.
Like watching the sitcoms where somebody is making a living running having a podcast and they weren't already famous, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So it was fucking awful. It had James Woods in it, for Christ's sake.
Mm-hmm.
And as a romantic interest, James Wood is about as interesting to me as, I don't know, syphilis toast.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's fair.
He's so gross.
That's fair.
The movie was riddled with misogyny. Just absolutely problematic levels of misogyny, sexism, threatening, gaslighting, everything. And Dolly Parton was fucking adorable.
As always.
Yeah, because she is. Everybody else in the movie, with the exception of the two goofballs that played her production team in the radio studio, they were funny. But the rest of it was, it was pretty much just the worst thing I saw all week.
Fun fact on 9 to 5, the director, as they got going, the director told Dolly, you can't act. You're a terrible actor. She says, yeah, well, it's your job to make me look good. So why don't you do your job, and I'll just say the lines. Like, yeah, she just stood up, and I'm like, on a movie about female empowerment, he's trying to rip her down, and she just wouldn't take it. I loved it. Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
She was not a good actor.
No.
She was good at acting as herself.
She was good at playing Dolly.
Yep.
In fact, Rhinestone, I was thinking about watching. I think it's called Rhinestone with Sylvester Stallone.
Oh, Rhinestone Cowboy.
No. Maybe it's not Rhinestone. It was something with Sylvester Stallone where she takes a bet from a guy and they pick Sylvester Stallone, who's like this cabbie in New York, to turn him into a country music star.
Oh, yeah, it is. It's just plain Rhinestone, it looks like.
Just plain old Rhinestone, yeah. And it's a terrible movie, and I still love it, so, yeah.
It is. What else? Oh, Legend? Which, I gotta tell you, I have very vague memories of Legend.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the beginning, it pops up, and it says a Ridley Scott film, and I went, ooh. And then kept watching. Now, yeah, Tim Curry.
That's not the stamp of approval you think it is.
Not often. You know, it's like when Colin Bunn writes something, you're 50-50. Mm-hmm. It's either going to be great or it's going to be garbage. But yeah, no, Tim Curry was fucking great in it. I mean, 10 hours of makeup to get in that. All of that.
That whole thing is evil. His look is evil was so great. And his performance is evil. That he came out through that makeup was incredible.
Especially considering the poor nature of the dialogue involved.
Yes.
So, yeah, Legend.
Did I ever tell you my Legend story that I heard from Billy Barty?
No.
So Billy Barty's in it, and he said they were just off set, and he said he passed by, and Tom Cruise is just agonizing, just over there, just agonizing, just pacing back and forth. He says, Tom, what's the matter? And Cruise said, I'm trying to figure out where I am in the scene, where I came from, what I'm doing, you know, what my motivation is. And Barty just looked up at him and said, Tom, have you ever tried acting?
Nice. Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Other than that, threw on a movie called Transformers 1.
Mm-hmm.
Because Transformers, the animated cartoon from the 80s, is behind a paywall I just can't even begin to afford. And both of those movies we're going to be talking about, well, the Transformers cartoon and Legend, we're going to be talking about on Gen Zex over at theleftshow.com on, I believe, Wednesday. Mm-hmm. So we'll be talking about them there. What about you? What did you get watched this week?
Of course, we had Ted Lasso, which
yep.
I really enjoyed this episode. It felt a lot. It felt, you know, it's, again, very Ted Lasso. I loved the hell out of it. Reacher kicked ass. And then my Tim Curry watch last night was I had forgotten that The Three Musketeers from 1990 was a Disney movie and got to watch it on Disney Plus, where Tim Curry plays Cardinal Richelieu. And you have Kiefer Sutherland as Athos, Oliver Platt as Porthos, Charlie Sheen, top billing. By the way,
yeah.
He was the first in the credits because he had just done Born on the 4th of July and gotten like accolades for it, was Aramis. And then Robin, basically, from Batman.
Chris O'Donnell.
I knew it was an Irish name. Chris O'Donnell as D'Artagnan. Rebecca De Mornay as the Baroness de Winter, and Michael Wincott as just the, as always, the evil sidekick, because that was what he was until The Crow. That's what he was in every fucking movie, and it was always gold. I'm like, Michael Wincott, he was in all these movies back then. And yeah, Michael Wincott, nobody gave a bad performance. I enjoy the performances. I love Kiefer Sutherland as Aramis. Athos. Charlie Sheen as Aramis is great. Oliver Platt steals the movie as Porthos. It's just the movie is so Hollywood. By the time you're done, you're like, wow, that was a big Hollywood production.
Very cheeseweeny.
Yeah, very cheeseweeny. Great performances all the way through. Even Rebecca De Mornay's moment, as her stuff is coming to an end, I was like, this is a really good performance from Rebecca De Mornay, who usually just fucking phones it in. It was fucking amazing. And I was like, yeah, I like this. Why? I kept watching and going, why do I love this movie apart from Oliver Platt? Why do I? And I just realized, I'm like, everybody was great in it. And it was bright and shiny and big production value and everything. And it was like, it was great. It was a great movie. It reminded me of the Errol Flynn Robin Hood era, you know, that kind of, it was that kind of level of, this is all just a lot of fun. Sit back and enjoy it. You don't even have to think, and they're not going to tell you anything that's wrong.
Yep.
It was a lot of fun. And then, of course, we had a couple of great shows this week. Let's start with Lanterns.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Great episode.
Damn.
Delightful episode.
Absolutely delightful episode. I was like, yeah, no, that's accurate. That's the level. You know, it's funny because Stewart is always depicted as a guy who can, you know, just uses lasers and, you know, force fields and stuff as he, and when he does battle as Green Lantern. But to have him do the bird thing, that's actually his level of ability. That's his level of power.
Yeah.
In the comics. So that was really cool. And then the ending, I won't spoil it for anybody, but that was fucking awesome. That ending scene made me so happy. I just fucking loved it.
Well, it just front loaded the next episode to be like, wait, mm-hmm. what? No.
Yeah.
No. More now, please. I'm so delighted that as we record this, it's hard. It's difficult because we record on Sundays, which means I watched this a week ago.
Yeah, I watched this on Sunday. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And
I got to wait until like 7 o'clock and then it's on. And I'm like, God damn, appointment television.
Yeah, I do the same thing with Ted Lasso and Star Trek. I watch them the mornings that they come out and then I get on with my day.
Mm-hmm.
Which the Ted Lasso part drives Tiffany, I think, up a tree because she would rather watch it when she's more awake.
Yep.
But I got I got math to do.
Yeah, I got my final episode of Trying. I hope there's a new season. They kind of ended it where they could just be done. But I'm like, but I really liked the teen kids. Let's have another season of this. Please, please, please.
Yep.
Because I really enjoyed it. But yeah. But yeah, it's like now I only have one British comedy on Wednesdays. And that's Ted Lasso. So. And then we had Strange New Worlds.
Yes, very tasty.
Oh my God! So this was 24 this week. It's funny for the guy on Trek Culture who's never seen 24 was like, "Oh, you know, it's like the Poseidon Adventure. That's the movie we're doing." And I'm like, "It was 24, dude. 100% 24." And I was like, "Why are we doing 24?" And I'm like, "I guess we did the Muppet Show more than a Muppet movie last week." And then I thought about it and I'm like, wasn't 24 was one of the first, if not the first, cinematic, you know, rectangular framed series that was on a major network, if I remember right.
I do not recall. I didn't watch it.
Yeah, but it was one of the first ones where they actually filmed it, you know, in the whatever cinematic format, you know, the rectangular format instead
16
of square.
By 9.
Yeah, 16 by 9. That's what I was trying to remember. But it was the first one that I remember seeing in 16 by 9 that I was like, well, no, this it feels like a movie when you watch it like that. And now everything's 16 by 9. In fact, it was weird for us when, Zack Snyder put out Justice League in the standard television format, you know, the black and white television format. I was like, why would you do that?
I fucked around with the settings on my TV for like 15 minutes before I looked it up online to see what the fuck was the problem.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, it's an IMAX format. I'm like, I don't have a fucking IMAX. I have a fucking TV. God damn it.
I got to watch it cut off on the sides like I'm watching old television or something.
Yep.
But this was, 24. It called back to one of my, I'm going to say it was one of my favorite episodes of Next Gen only because of the trope of it, which was, it was called Disaster. The Enterprise hit a thing in space and nobody was where they needed to be and couldn't get there.
Yep.
Like Geordi and Crusher were stuck in a cargo bay because Crusher had a bunch of stuff come in and Geordi was helping her catalog it or something, and they got stuck in the cargo bay. So Geordi can't be in engineering. Data and Riker are stuck in the Jeffries tubes because they were in 10 forward. They leave 10 forward. Worf is stuck in 10 forward, and fucking Keiko O'Brien's having a baby in front of him. Picard can't be on the bridge. He's in an elevator with a bunch of kids. Yeah, a turbo lift with a bunch of kids. And then it just leaves Troy and Ro Laren and Chief O'Brien, who can't be in front of the transporters, on running the bridge. And it was like, damn, this is such a good little... it's such a great episode when you think about nobody is where they need to be to fix this problem. Yeah. And yet they fix it. You know what I mean? And this one was like that. It was like nobody... Everybody was where they needed to be, but at the same time, the problem was... incredible.
Well, and you're still stacking character development on understood and fully realized characters that we never got to see their youth. So watching the Scotty evolution has been a lot of fun. It was fun having Pelia in there again, you know, fixing holes in the ship with electrical tape and just like you said, it was all of these different people in places that they shouldn't go. And
I like how calm she was about finding the pinhole and just getting a piece of tape out and talking the whole time to Scotty like it was, you know, like, oh, just a little problem I have to fix, because she's an engineer. That's how engineers are.
And then the whole doctor thing with
that was
pretty intense, especially oh, I don't want to give any spoilers away because I certainly went, oh.
Yeah.
You know, with the... Let's just say it was cold in the room and something happened.
So there were two parts that were where I got pulled out, and that was the basic science of it, was that the room's getting, you know, basically the temperature of, I guess it wouldn't be exactly the temperature of space, but it's fucking freezing. I mean, her finger broke off, for God's sakes.
Or you can spoil it. That's fine.
Yeah. But I mean, the idea is that I'm like, why? She didn't have her face covered. There's a reason why we put people in space suits, you know, when they go out into space, because that you have this protection all around you. And yet I'm like, yeah, her eyes should have been frozen in her skull. That was the only thing I had. That was the only problem I had with it, really, was like, I'm like, I'm like, I know we need to see Jess Bush's beautiful face, but give me a whole mask. That would have been fine. You know what I mean?
Put her in a suit. It's fucking freezing.
Yeah. And then we got a return of a character that has only ever been in the original pilot, The Cage. And that was Dr. Boyce, returns to the Enterprise. And he's played by Star Trek royalty, in a way. It was played by, let me find his name. Brian Markinson.
Yes.
And Brian Markinson first appeared to us in Star Trek The Next Generation in the episode where we meet Worf's half-brother, Nikolai, and he pulled all these people up. You know, he was trying to save all these people from a planet that was going to eat itself.
Yeah.
And yet they were not a warp capable civilization, and Starfleet's policy is let it. They have to die. It's a violation of the Prime Directive. But he had found a planet that was similar to theirs. And he was spinning this whole yarn, like, even the stars will be different when we go there. And he gets them up onto the ship. But meanwhile, this guy had gone up on the ship, saw everything. They tried to wipe his memory. They couldn't wipe his memory. And he was just like, I can't live with this. And that was Brian Markinson playing that part.
Nice.
And when you see his face, and I'll just put this up for those, you know, I'm like, yeah, there he is. There he is. Cause you know, we can scroll up and there's Boyce. I'm like, yeah, that was him. As soon as I saw the face, I'm like, oh yeah. He was also, there was an episode of Voyager where he was a crewman who got his face taken off by the Vadeen, and the guy was wearing his face. So he played two parts, basically. And that was, you know, some great body horror. And then DS9 had him on there as well, a guy seeking immortality. So,
yeah.
Love that episode. More, please. I wish we could get a lot more of this show. But I think that's it. We're out of time.
That is true.
So I invite you to join us over at Patreon, patreon.com/defendmedia, where every week we have extra content this week. It's going to be fun. It's a list. It's all the Sean Connery Bond movies ranked. And I can't wait to talk about it because I mostly agree with the list. Mostly.
That's fair.
A couple of things we're going to flip around. So that's coming up today on Patreon. Join us on patreon.com/defendmedia. Help us make a Patreon platoon out of our little Patreon squad. And if you're watching us on YouTube, thank you for joining. Please like, share, and subscribe. If you are not watching us on YouTube, please help us get more views than that stupid Sean Duffy Road movie he fucking made. Just for his Road series he made. I was so pissed to see he had 20,000 views on a couple of those. Fuck you. Come watch our show. It's better. Fuck you to Sean Duffy, I'm saying. So in the meantime, I will say, as I always do, until Wolverine's three doppelgangers need his help, make mine Marvel. For Stan.
For Asgard. Hey, I did it right this week.
Yeah.